You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, February 6th, or Hangover Monday if you were an Atlanta Falcons fan. Sorry about that. Oh, gosh. Pretty tough. I was tempted to go to bed up 28-3, then 28-9, and I thought, you know, I'll get a good night's sleep. I had a busy weekend, of course. Thanks for your prayers. I was with 7 engaged couples and couple of married couples and a priest leading an engaged couple's weekend. Great time. Always enjoy my time at beautiful Cliffview Conference and Retreat Center, and getting to hang out with engaged couples is always energizing, at least while I'm doing it. Then when I get home, I crash and burn. Of course, I couldn't crash too much because of the big game, Super Bowl and all that, and stayed up and watched it, and then saw what is the most epic collapse in Super Bowl history. Believe me, it brings me no joy. I was cheering for the Falcons, whose primary virtue was they're not the Patriots. But what can you say? There's nothing you can say. So we'll talk about that a little bit on the program today, the Super Bowl. Asking a question of the day, what did you eat during the Super Bowl? Maybe I shouldn't ask what you drank, because that may have changed as the game progressed, depending on your point of view. And then also, what was your favorite commercial? It's interesting, you know, how we've kind of come, I guess the difference is when you don't have a team in the Super Bowl, and as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan, I haven't had a team in the Super Bowl but once in the 40 Super Bowls I've watched. But it's kind of come to the place now where, you know, most football, most sporting events, if you're going to go refill snacks, whatever, you do so during the timeouts. With the Super Bowl, it seems, at least for me, you do it during the playing action so you don't miss the commercials. That was kind of what I was doing last night as I filled my plate generously with lots of good stuff. And I'll tell you what all I ate later. Regretting it, of course. Monday, always a day of regret, especially for you Falcons fans. 573-4-RED-4. If you want to chime in anytime during the program today, talk about it, bemoan it, celebrate it, talk trash, it's all welcome here. 573-4-RED-4 is the number you can call or text anytime during the program, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or Twitter. Talk about anything you want, but as I said, my question of the day, what did you eat during the big game last night, and what was your favorite commercial? I think I missed, for some reason, I missed a couple of the better ones. They allegedly got better as the night went on. It is the feast day of St. Paul Miki today, and companions. St. Paul Miki, one of the thousands of Japanese martyrs during the great anti-Catholic, anti-Christian persecution that took place there on the islands of Japan, really starting in the 17th century and for the next couple of centuries after that. We recently have talked a lot about the novel and the film Silence, which focuses on that period in history. We'll talk about St. Paul Miki, his companions. We'll talk also a little bit about the limits of martyrdom. Back to this little reading that I came across by chance, or maybe we could say by providence, as Oogway the Turtle says in Kung Fu Panda, there are no coincidences. Somebody else said that first, though. I think, yeah, it's scripture. Anyway, still a great movie. We'll talk about the limits of martyrdom, also, we'll talk about the beauty of desperate faith, looking at the gospel readings for today. So all that and more on the program. We'll see what else we can get into. It may be a bit meandering today. Usually my weekends, I spend a good bit of time early in the morning on the weekends while everyone else in my family is sawing logs. sort of laying out the radio week, since I was pretty much dawn to night, late night, working with these engaged couples over the weekend, didn't have that opportunity nearly as much. But it really was good. One of the things that's pretty cool to watch over the course of these weekends, you know, you have these engaged couples show up for a full weekend retreat. They have no idea what to expect. They're a little apprehensive. They're there for different reasons. You know, some because they have the opportunity to knock out two of the three major components of our marriage preparation process in our diocese, which is stouter than most dioceses. And so you either have me to thank or to blame for that, since I'm the director of Family Life Ministries. So you people say, well, wow, I can knock out two of our three primary catechetical components of marriage preparation in one weekend. Sign me up. So you have some who come for that. You have some who have no other option because of work schedules or they're at a distance from each other. And then you have others probably who a well-meaning parent said, I really think you need the retreat. And so we're going to pony up the dough to make it happen. So you get all kind of different attitudes. But they all come in a little apprehensive, especially if one of them is not Catholic, because they figure, you know, this is some big papal indoctrination weekend. We're going to break out the incense and the pointy hats and all the rest. But to watch the journey over the weekend, and it doesn't happen for all of them. I mean, some of them continue on with their traffic school mindset. We just got to get through this thing. But for some, you kind of see it's like a, you know, it's like a closed up flower that begins to break open. It's pretty cool to see over the course of the weekend. And, you know, to see them begin to open up, to realize that this is not going to be a terrifying experience. And hopefully, even though I'm sure post-lunch on Saturday, yeah, it can get a little, you know, they can get a little bleary-eyed because we cover a lot of material. But for the most part, the spirits of the couple's really, really good and gives me great hope. No guarantees, of course, but gives me great hope for their future. So, like I said, thanks for y'all's prayers. But that did cut into my typical show prep time, but for good cause. So you can bear with it, I guess, a little bit today. We're all playing hurt this time of year. Really appreciate my two couples and my priest who were there this weekend as well. I was thinking about this Super Bowl last night, which, because I know I don't usually get into sports until the second segment, but most people watch this game last night. One of these days, I got to get me a flat screen so I can watch this thing in style. I still got one of those old tube TVs. Think about a 25-inch screen. So I sat there in my television room, which is heavily cluttered with furniture from my daughter's house that she lived in for a year before she came back home for her senior year in college. So it was me. My wife would come in occasionally, Angie, and sit and humor me and watch the game, which she had very little interest, ask a few questions. Most of the time, though, I was watching by my lonesome. My one son, who's into football, was at another friend's house. My other son, he's into the food, not into the football. So I was watching this thing, and I texted my one Atlanta fan friend. I mean, I'm sure I've got other friends out there that are Falcons fans, but I just don't know that about them so much. I have one friend who I know is a passionate Falcons fan, long-suffering Falcons fan. So I texted him last night after the pick six by the Falcons, in which Tom Brady looked kind of old, laying himself out there to his credit, trying to tackle the guy who'd picked him off inside the Falcons red zone and returned it 90 yards or whatever for a touchdown. Atlanta up 21-0 at that point and looking like it's going to be a Super Bowl blowout. So all I texted my friend was, "Go Falcons!" Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. Now, I don't think that and that alone would anger the wolf gods. You've heard of the wolf gods, right? It's a whole theorem about the wolf gods. Now, keep in mind, this is all tongue-in-cheek. I'm a monotheist, okay? There is one God. He has no rival. One God in three persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, before you write to my bishop and accuse me of heresy. When I say woof gods, I mean it all tongue-in-cheek, but that there are supernatural powers that hear your every word, and if you begin to woof it up, talk smack for your team, the woof gods will punish you. They are quite relentless and ruthless. So be careful about that. But all I wrote to my friend was, go Falcons. Maybe the 3 exclamation points after the pick six did it. He texts back, all the more sweet since it is against the Patriots. So the only other text I sent him, 10:32 p.m. after it was over, all I texted was, I am sorry. I've heard no response. Maybe I should call his wife and check on him. Oh, my goodness gracious. Wow. You're up 21-0. You're up 21-3 at the half. You're up 28-3 in the third quarter. 28-9, I believe, going into the fourth quarter. And somehow, inexplicably, even while you're up 28-20, you've got the ball first and 10 at the New England 22 with less than whatever, with about 4 minutes to go. How about three running plays? How about three running plays, Mr. Shanahan, and then kick a field goal, go up 2 scores? But no! No field goal. Punt. New England drives. Touchdown, 2-point conversion, and then overtime, and you know the rest. More about this when we get back from the break. 573-4BREAD-4. Tell me what you ate. What was your favorite commercial in last night's Super Bowl? 573-4BREAD-4. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Again, asking the question of the day here on this Monday, a day full of regrets, whether you're a Falcons fan or if you're regretting your dietary intake during the big game last night, unless you're, you know, much more self-controlled than me. What did you eat, and what was your favorite commercial? Couple of comments we've gotten on this. Let's see, on Facebook. 573-4BREAD-4, by the way, if you want to call or text. 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Kathy says, butter pecan ice cream and no favorite commercial. Where are the Clydesdales? Yeah, no Clydesdales this year from Budweiser. Kevin, Deacon Kevin, what's the Super Bowl? Okay, all right, I get it. That's the second Deacon that I know was not interested in the Super Bowl, because there was one who scheduled a phone conference meeting with my wife and her work at our parish youth ministry last night. She said, aren't you worried it's Super Bowl? He said, I don't even own a TV. Well, good for you. Not Deacon. Joe says, what did he eat? All of it. Favorite commercial? None of them. Diane says our favorite commercials were the Buy commercial. You saw that one, didn't you, with Justin Timberlake and Christopher Walken? I think somebody tweeted out they could have watched Christopher Walken and Justin Timberlake sit on a couch for 24 straight hours. Yeah, I thought that was brilliant, because I'd never heard of Buy until that commercial. Now I know what it is. She also mentioned the Audi commercial, you know, the equal pay, equal work kind of thing. Evidently, Audi, though, taking some hits today for the fact that evidently they don't give equal pay for equal work in their company. So you may want to check your own track record before you get preachy in the commercial world, just saying. Let's see. She goes, hummus and ale-1 salsa with scoops is what she ate. Ale-1, that's a kind of a local drink, kind of a ginger ale-ish. We call it affectionately swamp water around here in the Lexington area. So she says cheesecake brownies and also agreed where the Clydesdales. David says boiled peanuts. Really? Listen, I lived in South Carolina for a few years where they love their boiled peanuts. It sounds like bald peanuts when they talk about it. Bald peanuts. No thanks. Ooh. Bland. Moist. Soft. I like some crunch in my peanut. Corona Light chips and homemade guac taco bar with lettuce wraps, queso, smoked bologna, snap peas, and chocolate cookies made by his daughters. Man, that's pretty good. He says best commercial tied the Buy and Ford commercial. Worst was Audi. There you go. Thank you. And I loved watching the trophy presentation. Yeah, Roger Goodell. Oh, gosh. After suspending Brady 4 games, Deflategate, some bad blood. Oh. Besides the Falcons fan base and team and executives, nobody was more upset with that turnout probably than Roger Goodell. Maybe, but, you know, a great Super Bowl is good for the league, so he could probably swallow his pride. What did I eat? Man, what didn't I eat? We had some cheese sticks. We had some hot wings. We had some Braunschweiger I picked up yesterday, also known as liverwurst. Mmm, spread on a saltine cracker. Not bad. I had some butter pecan ice cream. What else did I have? Seems like I had something, you know, a few chips and dip. Not good. So back on the wagon today. So anyway, if you want to chime in, 573-4BREAD-4. I had this thought as I was getting ready this morning, and maybe I need to start a hashtag campaign on this. Bible verse that best describes Super Bowl 51. And this verse popped in my mind this morning, kind of, you know, like Doc Brown in the Back to the Future series had his vision of the flux capacitor after hitting his head, I think, on the toilet seat. Well, my epiphany came in the shower. Luke chapter 8, verse 18. Tell me this doesn't fit last night's Super Bowl. The words of our Lord himself. To anyone who has, more will be given. And from the one who has not, even what he seems to have will be taken away. Oh, gosh. That says it, doesn't it? To anyone who has, a.k.a. Brady and Belichick, more will be given. And from the one who has not, even what he seems to have will be taken away. A.k.a. Matt Ryan, Dan Quinn, the entire Falcons ownership and fan base. Ouch. Life ain't fair, is it? And you think about it, Atlanta has become the new Cleveland. I mean, they were talking about this last night. When they were talking about it, they were anticipating an Atlanta Super Bowl victory that in like 50 years of sports action in the city of Atlanta and all their professional franchises, they have had precisely one championship. The Atlanta Braves in 1995. One championship in 50 years between the Falcons, Braves, Hawks, and what is it, the Flames hockey team in Atlanta? That's pretty bad, honestly. That hurts. And they didn't have that. So hopefully I'll hear from my friend, the only true Falcon fan I know, and hopefully he's sobered up by now. I don't even think he drinks. Today, as I said, the feast day of St. Paul Meeky and companions. St. Paul Meeky, one of those caught up in the horrible anti-Catholic, anti-Christian persecution that took place in the 1700s, beginning in the 1700s. This from CatholicCulture.com. Nagasaki, Japan, is familiar to Americans as the city on which the second atomic bomb was dropped, killing hundreds of thousands. But 3.5 centuries before, 26 martyrs of Japan were crucified on a hill, now known as Holy Mountain, as the Holy Mountain, overlooking Nagasaki. Among them were priests, brothers, and laymen, Franciscans, Jesuits, and members of the secular Franciscan order. There were catechists, doctors, simple artisans and servants, old men, and innocent children, all united in a common faith and love for Jesus and his church. Brother Paul Meeke, who is a Jesuit and a native of Japan, has become the best known among the martyrs of Japan. And according to Catholic culture, while hanging upon a cross, Paul Meeke preached to the people gathered for the execution, which I'm sure was done via crucifixion, to not only kill and torture, execution being among the worst death sentences you could imagine, but also to mock and to humiliate the people of the cross, I'm sure. But this is what he preached from his own cross. The sentence of judgment says these men came to Japan from the Philippines, but I did not come from any other country. I am a true Japanese. See, that was the accusation, right? And that was the whole impulse behind the persecution after the earliest missionaries, including St. Francis Xavier, the earliest Jesuits, came preaching the gospel there on the island of Japan. They were at first welcomed and received well, with thousands, hundreds of thousands of Japanese coming to the faith, until finally some Japanese leaders and officials began to perceive that Christianity was a threat to their culture, to undermine who they were as a people and to be a tool of European domination, I would suppose. And not that they were entirely misguided, because there have been those unfortunate co-optings at times of the Christian mission by those with more imperial designs. But I'm sure one of the lies told about those who were being killed is they were not true Japanese. These were foreign interlopers who had come in. St. Paul Meeke making it clear, I am a true Japanese. The only reason for my being killed is that I have taught the doctrine of Christ. I certainly did teach the doctrine of Christ, he said. I thank God it is for this reason I die. I believe that I'm telling only the truth before I die. I know you believe me, and I want to say to you all once again, ask Christ to help you to become happy. I obey Christ. After Christ's example, I forgive my persecutors. I do not hate them. I ask God to have pity on all, and I hope my blood will fall on my fellow men as a fruitful rain. Whoa. Wow. You know, it's amazing that when the missionaries returned to Japan in the 1860s, after being banned from the island for 200 or more years, at first they found no trace of Christianity, but after establishing themselves, they found that thousands of Christians, living around Nagasaki still existed, that they had secretly preserved their faith. Talk more about this when we come back from the break, because what I want to talk about is not only the beauty of martyrdom, but also the limit of martyrdom. And you'll see exactly what I mean from this beautiful document about how to dedicate the altar of a Catholic parish. It's got a hidden treasure, some hidden treasures tucked in it. We'll be back with more. If you want to chime in, 5734BREAD4, 5734BREAD4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. This is Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show. Here on this Monday, February 6th, the day after the second burning of Atlanta. Sorry, apologies to Atlantans who survived General Sherman's march to the sea. Yeah, pretty bad last night. The good news is Pope Francis putting out a message that he sent out to the English-speaking world, particularly those in the U.S., in advance of the Super Bowl. That's the Holy Father, not just interested in European-style football, but the real thing. So he actually put out a video message. Of course, he did it in Spanish, and there was a translation. And this is what the Holy Father had to say in advance of the Super Bowl. I'm sure the most watched, I think, well, maybe, I don't know, but does the World Cup top it out? Maybe the World Cup tops it out. I don't know, but this, but certainly in the English-speaking world, nothing with the viewership like the Super Bowl. This is the Holy Father's message. Great sporting events like today's Super Bowl are highly symbolic, showing that it is possible to build a culture of encounter and a world of peace. By participating in sport, we are able to go beyond our own self-interest, and in a healthy way, we learn to sacrifice, to grow in fidelity, and respect the rules, unlike those blasted patriots. No, he didn't really say that last part, but respect the rules. Maybe that was a little deflate gate dig. I kind of doubt it. Maybe there's a closet NFL fan among the Vatican. Well, you got Greg Burke. He's the new Vatican, English-speaking American Vatican spokesman. We need to check his sporting history. Anyway, this is how he concludes his message. May this year's Super Bowl be a sign of peace, friendship, and solidarity to the world. Thank you. I'm pretty sure Tom Brady's Catholic. I'm not sure about Matt Ryan. He went to Boston College. Maybe he is. Matt and I may need to go for some pastoral counseling at the Vatican after what happened last night. That's kind of the shame about it, too, if you're an Atlanta fan. And if you're Matt Ryan, because, I mean, Matt Ryan played a great game. I mean, my goodness. I mean, particularly the first half and into the second half. You cannot fault Matt Ryan for that game last night. I know he fumbled once, but, wow, he was just, his pocket was blown up. I mean, and that pass that he threw to Julio Jones, which should have been, honestly, the game-clenching catch, if Kyle Shanahan had used a little bit more common sense in his play calling. So nobody can fault Matt Ryan. And you got to feel for the guy. And, of course, Brady and Belichick, who had already, I think, been established as the greatest in the Super Bowl era, if there was any lingering doubt. You know, I think I tweeted out during the game when it seemed apparent Atlanta was going to win that, you know, for all of the success of Brady and Belichick, they only had one Super Bowl since 2005, and that one was really a gift by another horrific play call by Pete Carroll, choosing to try to throw the ball from the one-yard line instead of giving it to beast mode, Marshawn Lynch. So, you know, I was speculating that maybe all this about the Patriots' greatness is a little bit overblown. Well, scratch that. I guess I can go delete a tweet, but it'll live on in cyberspace forever. Anyway, I was doing a little looking at St. Paul Miki, the story of St. Paul Miki and companions. He was evidently martyred there in Japan, crucified along with a large number of other Christians, a very public and brutal attempt to suppress the Catholic faith, the Christian faith on the island of Japan. As I said, the rulers began to see it, Christianity, as an instrument of cultural imperialism by the Europeans and began to seek to stamp it out. Miki, his death and the death of the others, and Miki, of course, preaching so courageously from the cross, the Japanese officials, it's, you know, the movie Silence that I was talking about, the novel, the Shishaku Endo novel and movie based on the novel that was just released that tells the story of some Jesuits who go in and face this horrific persecution. They came in the setting a few decades after the mass execution of St. Paul Miki and his companions, presumably after the Japanese officials learned that if they wanted to suppress the faith, it wasn't going to be through martyrdom. It was going to be through apostasy, getting people to turn from the faith. Because the words that St. Paul Miki preached from the cross as someone who was truly Japanese, who embraced the Christian faith, and that he hoped his blood would fall on his fellow men as fruitful rain. In the words of the ancient Christian Tertullian, the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. The government leaders discovered and realized that if they made martyrs, it was only going to advance their cause or the cause of the Christians. If they could get people to turn from the faith under the threat of torture or the torture of loved ones, then they could accomplish their purpose. So, you know, you read about people like these. There are other great martyrs in the history of Japan. I think St. Magdalene of Nagasaki and others. And you realize that the profound Christian witness and tradition there in Japan, which many are not aware of. But I was also reminded again of as beautiful, as haunting a gift over the history of the church that martyrdom is, those who make their lives a very sacrifice. We talked last Friday about this reading I came across, about the blessing of a parish altar. It was just sitting on a copy machine over at the Catholic Center, the diocesan offices where I work, and I picked it up and began to read it. I've only been present for one dedication, consecration of an altar on which the Mass is celebrated. So I came across this piece and just began to read it. It's so beautifully written. It talks about the nature and the dignity of an altar. And it begins, and I shared a little this Friday, from meditating on God's word, the ancient fathers of the church did not hesitate to assert that Christ was the victim, priest, and altar of his own sacrifice. So he was the sacrificial victim, he was the priest who offered it, and it was his own body on which the sacrifice, through which the sacrifice was given. And then it goes on to talk about how the Christian also is a spiritual altar. Since Christ, head and teacher, is the true altar, his members and disciples are also spiritual altars on which the sacrifice of a holy life is offered to God. And so we make a gift of ourselves. This is the very nature of what it means to be a Christian. In fact, I think it was the Second Vatican Council that said something along the lines of, we as human beings cannot really find ourselves until we make a sincere gift of ourselves. Now, one of the things that I had always heard about the Catholic Church on my journey to the church discovered this, is that there has been a tradition in the church that altars have within themselves some relic of a martyr. I mean, I don't think it's a hard and fast rule, and maybe less so now, but that when an altar is built, a fixed altar in a parish, and, you know, before you think you have some sort of a aha, gotcha kind of a moment, you're not a Catholic, and you like to point out where the Catholic Church is wrong, this document very clearly says that, of course, the church can celebrate the Mass anywhere that circumstances might require. You may have seen Mass offered, you know, by a military chaplain on a rock at a beachhead, you know. Anything can be used, if needed, as an altar for the sacrifice of the Mass. But where there is the possibility of gathering together in a fixed place to have an altar that is dedicated and blessed for such a purpose, is only fitting. And as I said, there had always been, you know, there has been this tradition of some piece, some relic, a relic being some item that was typically part of either, you know, usually you, even a small piece of bone or something associated, directly connected with the body of a martyr, which, by the way, is an idea, the sanctity of even the flesh of a martyr by God's grace is something that goes back to the Old Testament, is reflected in the book of Acts. So this is not a crazy idea. But they have this whole section here, the altar is honoring martyrs. And this is something, I don't know why, maybe it's because I'm not the brightest bulb in the pack. This paragraph says something. It says, all the dignity of the altar rests on its being the Lord's table. Thus, the martyr's body does not bring altar, I'm sorry, does not bring honor to the altar. Rather, the altar does honor to the martyr's tomb. For it is altogether proper to erect altars over the burial places of martyrs and other saints, or deposit their relics beneath altars as a mark of respect and as a symbol of the truth that the sacrifice of its members has its source in the sacrifice of the head. That to me was kind of one of those, wow, I'd never thought of it. What, which honors which? We'll talk about this when we get back from the break, because I think this is an important concept, and it understands both the, helps us understand both the glory of martyrdom and the limit of our martyrdom. We'll be back on the other side of the break. If you want to chime in, 573-4-BREAD-4, call or text. What did you eat during the Super Bowl? What was your favorite commercial? You can also post on Facebook or Twitter, or shoot me an email, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show.
Here on this Monday the 6th, the day after the Atlanta disaster and the Patriot triumph. So I just can't imagine what it's like to wake up being a Falcons player today. Tough. Now Freeney's talking about retiring. Oh, how can you retire after this? I mean, man, unbelievable. Once I guess the Patriots line figured out how to give Tom Brady time, that was a big key, because he was getting rocked early on, and that's the key to beating Tom Brady. You gotta pressure him, no doubt. That's the key to beating any quarterback, to be honest with you. 573-4-BREAD-4, asking a question of the day. What did you eat during the Super Bowl last night? This time to come clean. I can't grant you absolution, sorry, but if you want to commiserate together in your dietary regret, I'm here for you. After a diet of cheese sticks, chicken wings, Braunschweiger, and butter pecan ice cream, who am I to judge? 573-4-BREAD-4. You can call or text, email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or post a thought on Facebook, Twitter. Let's see, Allison and Daniel, brother and sister of our own Alex, the show producer, both texted, and maybe they were at the same party. Allison says, pigs in a blanket, wings, queso. Daniel also, pigs in a blanket, wings, and queso. Had to be at the same party. I'm glad to see pigs in a blanket kind of making a comeback. They were big when I was a kid. It was kind of a staple of our school cafeteria, and then they went away for a long time. Kind of like wallabies, but they've come back strong. She says, I didn't have a favorite commercial. None of them were very good this year. But if I had to choose, I liked the Bud Light one with the dog. Yeah, I guess that's the one with Spuds McKenzie back from the grave. Yeah, that wasn't too bad. I was never a huge Spuds McKenzie fan, though. I'm old enough to remember the original when he was still walking the planet. Let's see. The guy from Chicago Tribune rated the various commercials last night. And let's see what he gave. He gave the, you know, this whole Anheuser-Busch commercial. He gave that a, let's see, a B+. The Budweiser Anheuser-Busch, where the guy's the immigrant coming over, and he, Mr. Adolphus Busch, and he meets Eberhard Anheuser there at the bar. It was sort of a subtle pro-immigration message. He gives the Mr. Clean commercial a C-. I was watching this. One of the few commercials that my wife Angie saw as she was the brief period she was watching the game. It was a very, let's say, eroticized Mr. Clean commercial where Mr. Clean shows up complete with tight white pants and outfit and begins to clean, and the wife, feeling a bit overwhelmed, finds herself attracted to Mr. Clean. It was a little weird. It was a little creepy, I'll be honest with you. And, you know, just when you're saying, where's the world going on this, Mr. Clean morphs away, and it's actually her sort of lumpy, bearded husband who's been cleaning the house, and she attacks him erotic sort of way, right? I guess the message is, guys, you want to really attract your woman, then you'll clean. It was an odd kind of a commercial. You know, I mean, I guess you could say, well, you know, at least on the positive note is that it extols the virtue of servant love in marriage. We'll just leave it there. How about that? Like I said, he gives the Audi commercial a B, the Audi commercial. Maybe that's before the revelation that Audi actually doesn't give equal pay for equal work. Let's see a couple of other ones. The King's Hawaiian Rolls one he gives a B. That one didn't do much for me, I'll be honest with you. I thought the weird sort of, I forget which, maybe it was T-Mobile, the whole like 50 Shades of Grey kind of was a little bit twisted. No, thank you. I didn't think it was overall. I think one of my favorites was the Honda commercial that had the celebrities from their yearbook photos talking. I thought that was pretty good. That was pretty creative. I'll give you that. And, of course, we talked about the Christopher Walken, Justin Timberlake commercial. By the way, one last thing I'll touch on here on the Super Bowl. I'm not exactly by any means a Lady Gaga fan. It's really not my style of music. And certainly, Lady Gaga is, like a lot of celebrities, she's out to get attention and she's done some outrageous things. Certainly, I'm sure she has point of views I disagree with. She is a practicing Catholic, which is interestingly enough. You know, she was raised Catholic, like a lot of celebs. I think left the practice of the faith, but I think as at least at times recently tweeted out about going to Mass. So she's back practicing her faith. And honestly, I thought she put on a pretty good show. Not crazy about the outfit, but considering what it could have been, hey. I actually thought she entertained. I thought she was respectful. It was fun. It was well choreographed. I'll take that performance over Beyonce's from a few years ago, and Katy Perry's too. Thought it was well done. It's still amazing to me they can pull that thing off in that short halftime that they had. Maybe the Falcons were out watching the halftime show. Maybe that's what happened to them in the locker room. Who knows? Anyway, so we were talking about the martyrdom of St. Paul Miki and martyrdom in general and the dedication of altars. And this, I don't know why it occurred to me. I guess it didn't occur to me. I guess I had always imagined that putting a relic of a martyr inside the altar or under the altar of a church. And by the way, according to this document that I mentioned earlier, it always has to be under the altar. Sometimes they go all out with this. At the shrine of St. John Newman, one of the first archbishops or bishops of Philadelphia, St. John Newman, St. John Neumann, pronounced different ways. They've got there in the chapel church, underneath the main church, an altar with a glass front of it with the entire body of St. John Neumann on display. So that's going all out. Most altars that have relics of martyrs, it's maybe a piece of bone or something tucked underneath the altar. Then I guess I always imagined that it was the bone or the piece of the body of the martyr was put there to honor the altar. But as it says here, the dignity of the altar rests on it being the Lord's table. Thus, the martyr's body does not bring honor to the altar. Rather, the altar does honor to the martyr's tomb. Why? Because our sacrifice of ourselves only finds meaning and has value when united to Christ's triumphant sacrifice on the cross. Apart from Christ's death and resurrection, any of our martyrdoms are pointless and futile. But united with him, it's his death that brings meaning to our own suffering. Our suffering doesn't honor him in that sense. Primarily, it's his suffering that honors our suffering. And we'll talk about this more as the week goes on, because I think, wow. This is why we always need to be sure that we are suffering for the right reasons. Because ultimately, our own suffering, by its own sake, does nothing in God's economy, but only you and united with his. Love the gospel reading for today. We won't be able to get into it much here, but it's the story really of how Jesus was beginning to gather large crowds of people. They crossed over from the sea, across the sea, and immediately they were met by people. People were scurrying, bringing the sick on mats to wherever the Herod he was. Wherever he entered a village or a town, they would lay their sick in the marketplaces and beg him that they might touch only the tassel of his cloak, and many as touched it were healed. There's a great extolling in Mark's gospel of desperate faith. That's a great, great image, and certainly we want to say, Lord, increase my faith. Let's spin the dollar catechism wheel because we're running out of time rapidly. Between 1 and 2865, total number of paragraphs in the catechism, 497. Is the paragraph number. Let's see what she says here. We always know the truth is never random, of course. 497, the gospel accounts understand the virginal conception of Jesus as a divine work that surpasses all human understanding and possibility. That which is conceived in her is of the Holy Spirit, said the angel to Joseph about Mary, his fiancée. The church sees here the fulfillment of the divine promise given through the prophet Isaiah, behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son. We find in Jesus a reflection of all the miraculous interventions in births before him, the great prophets, Isaac, for example, the birth of Samson and so forth, Samuel. But here's the difference. God, through natural means, brought about those births. Here in Jesus, the quintessential gift of God, not through human agency, but by his own gift. That's the point of the virgin birth. Jesus' own divine sonship. And by the way, if you think, you know, you hear these so-called biblical scholars self-styled, well, you know, back then they thought it was a virgin birth, but now we know better. Check me if I'm wrong, Sandy, but they knew back then that babies weren't born of virgins too. Okay, so check your chronological snobbery at the door. That's why we can extol the Blessed Mother as both virgin and mother. Mystery of mysteries. I'll be back with you tomorrow by God's grace. Have a great rest of your day. This is the Mike Allen Show.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.